Welcome to 3GT, the podcast for three guys, a pastor, a professor, and a parishioner discuss theology from a practical standpoint, all from a Reformed perspective. Find out more at 3GT.xyz.
Well, thank you for tuning in to another episode of Three Guys Theologizing, my favorite podcast and your favorite podcast. And that is saying a lot because I actually host two other podcasts than this one, The Daily Scoop and The Jerusalem Chamber, but I am glad to be back at Three Guys Theologizing today. My name is Kyle, and I am joined today with Scott Hunt and Barry York as we continue sitting around the table discussing different topics and waxing theological about them all. So
the
welcome
fire,
back.
Kyle, the fire. We're sitting around the fire.
The fire, that's true. We are sitting around a fire. For those of you who can't see, which is everybody because this is a podcast, Barry has a warm fire going in his fireplace next to him. Although he's still wearing a stocking hat, so I'm going to assume the fireplace is not really doing its job.
Oh, it's pretty warm in here. But okay. You don't want too much
so Barry heat just enjoys to leave the chimney. And since we're talking fashion, we might as well point out that Scott is wearing an adorable cardigan.
Now, truth be told, this was purchased for me by my wife today. So wow. I had to wear it for you, Kyle.
Oh,
and
man.
I put on my Mr. Rogers shoes, which you cannot see, but I promise you I have. Kyle, verify.
Yep, they are Mr. Rogers shoes, and if I could, I'd cue the music right now. Won't you be my neighbor? I would personally love to be Scott's neighbor, but he would go crazy, and he'd have to start charging me for the legal advice he gives me. Just a little bit of a teaser for a future episode. I go to trial in 1 week from this recording over my dog, who we have talked about on this podcast before, and Scott, the lawyer, has been serving as, well,
an advisor.
Advisor in an advisor.
I'm not giving you legal advice. No, I'm giving you help and helping, pointing you in the right direction, Kyle.
Your dog is also why he would not want to be your neighbor.
that is the other reason.
Because it always be in his lawn.
In rib cages while he's trying to mow, which is really annoying. So now let's get to it as we sit around the fire. When this episode is released, we will be into the year 2021, assuming New Year's Eve does not mark the apocalypse for all of humanity, which would only be the best way to say goodbye to 2020 if it happened, but we trust it won't. So we do greet a new year, 2021, and I don't know about you guys, but I'm sure hoping that the months ahead are better than the months that lie behind us. But one of the things that we want to talk about as we stand on the threshold of this new year is some ways of reflecting on 2020. It was a peculiar year in many ways across the spectrum over all sorts of issues. But of course, dominating 2020 was the COVID-19 pandemic. And so serious were the consequences of that pandemic. A lot of people have noted how 2020 in many ways was the lost year or the stolen year, I think is what we were calling it before we sat down to record this episode. And so I just want to talk a little bit about what your lives look like here as we've endured 10 months, 11 months of this pandemic. Maybe what of your daily routines have changed, what looks a little different, and then talking on the broader scale of society, maybe what has been taken from us in this last year? And as Christians, how should we be thinking about these things? So to get us started, just to introduce, you know, what changes really took place in your guys' lives and your daily routine over this last year?
I know for us, being at a school, a seminary, this year's been a challenge for many reasons, but Corona is certainly up there at the top. It hit in March when all the mandates started rolling out, and we had to move to only an online format for the spring quarter. So in a sense, we lost about 9 weeks that we would have normally been on campus. And over the summer, when more information came out, we decided to come back in the fall on campus. And we were able to do that. And we've been on campus except for 2 weeks. There were 2 weeks where we had some cases pop up in the population there at RPTS. And there was also another bug that was going around as well. So we decided to just quarantine the whole campus for 2 weeks and come back. But since then, thankfully, everything's been fairly peaceful. And, you know, you're just aware of it all the time. It seems like all the extras I've had to put aside, extra projects, extra things that I would have liked to have given attention to, because it seems like every decision that you make, you're having to take this into consideration. And so, as one of my friends has said, it seems like it takes twice as long to do half the work, because there's just so many obstacles that the coronavirus and all the lockdowns and restrictions have brought upon us. You know, for instance, one of the things we do at a school is we go and recruit. We make trips to recruit, and we haven't been able to do that. And so to replace that, we've had to go more micro scale and do things like Zoom meetings and phone calls and those types of things, which you can't hit as large a group in. And so it does take more time. So that's just one example of life for the professor among us.
Yeah, Barry, you mentioned that this hit in March, and I can't help but remember we were recording an episode when all this stuff was going down, and we were recording as the NCAA basketball tournament got canceled.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And because I was upset about that. That's the one thing I look forward to every year. But, you know, that was just...
Literally, Scott, that's the one thing you look forward to in a year? That, like, out of 12 months, the only thing you look forward to?
That's it. That is it. I'm a simple man. I don't ask for sweaters. They're just given to me. All I ask for is my NCAA tournament.
There we go. I just want to make sure.
No.
I know you're a lawyer, and so you're intentional with
your entertainment-wise, that might be the one thing I look forward to, Kyle. Thank you very much for drawing that out. I appreciate that. Words, you know, have meaning. We need to be very careful of what we say. We don't want to put something wrong in an affidavit. Heaven forbid, because yeah, Kyle will jump on that.
But
who could have thought that was just the tip of the iceberg of everything that happened? And, you know, it hasn't affected my daily life very much. I have not missed work a single day because of COVID. I've been in the office every day that I would normally have been in the office. What has changed for me is I haven't had jury trials like I would have normally. They suspended jury trials sometime in May or June, and didn't allow us to have one again until August. I had one jury trial, started a second one, and then that got shut down. And I'm not going to have another jury trial until March. So that changes for me. It frees me up a little bit.
What is the reason for that, Scott? I mean, there's only 15, 20 people in a room. And
no, well, to pick a jury, you have to have about 60 to 100 people in a room, and there's just no space to do that. And we tried that, and we managed to have some COVID spread during a jury trial. So they canceled that. The one thing I do, has stuck with me is, Ashton Berry, you haven't seen her in a while, but she came up to me and she is a sweet, sweet girl, has a tender heart. And she said, "Dad, I feel like everybody is robbing my childhood because I can't go to my friend's house. I can't go out and play. I can't go to school. I can't do all of this stuff. I just feel like my childhood is being robbed." And a lot of ways, I think, all my kids have felt that way about this year. And in a lot of senses, I've felt that way. You know, my son graduated in May, and we couldn't do the typical graduation. We had to have an open house outside. So in a lot of ways, I just feel like because of COVID-19, lives have just been upended. And, some people would say it's been an overreaction. Some people would say it's not been enough. But, I mean, it's clearly been a distraction and a difficulty for sure.
Yeah, I think that's helpful. You know, for our part here, in some ways, my daily routines didn't change because my office is here in my home. But I think that a lot of people, and both of you as elders, probably recognize this as well. How to shepherd through a pandemic has been very difficult. You know, dealing with people that are lonely, dealing with people that are going through depression, and yet dealing with people going through the anxieties of needing to socially distance. I found myself as a pastor, I never know exactly what people wanted of me through the months. You know, do you want to visit? Do you not want to visit? And that was very trying. I think it was very difficult. You know, it was also difficult at times when I thought about the preaching ministry. You know, all of life was put on a hold. All of our attention was given to these current events. And historically, I'm a pastor that really doesn't let current events control the pulpit. It actually aggravates me a lot when the fodder for every sermon comes from current events or whatever the leading news headline is. And yet I found myself this year, and not that I did it a lot, but I found myself responding a little more to the current events. How can we think about this as Christians? How should we be? And yet also trying to give people, letting church be a bit of a reprieve from that. You know, the truths that we confess and the lifestyle that we long for out of the grace of Jesus, well, that doesn't differ and change with the changing of what's going on in society. And so sometimes just thinking, you know, church needs to be a place of refuge where people don't have to hear about all of this. And trying to walk that balance, I have found to be difficult. I still find it to be difficult. Mm-hmm. You know, not everybody's back to normal. We don't have everybody back in our own church. A lot of people were back by July, and then we had a COVID, not outbreak, but a number of people in the congregation got it. And the elders, you know, it was one thing when COVID was out there, and suddenly when it's inside your walls, you're like, oh, well, boy, this is very different than it being out there somewhere else. And so there were challenges there. But no doubt in many ways, in many of our personal lives, a lot has been taken from us. You know, Scott, I'm very sympathetic to your son and his graduation. You know, we had a couple high schoolers here who graduated, and not only were they not able to finish their senior year with the gusto that they usually enjoy, but all the pomp and the circumstance that follows was just dead on arrival, and no doubt. What about when you think of society at large? So maybe not just things personally affecting you. What are some other things that in this year, besides the NCAA tournament, Scott?
Thank you.
What are some other things that we've lost? What are in this stolen year that has stolen so much from us? What else have you guys seen?
I think we're seeing people breaking down. Mm-hmm. I know of people who are struggling with emotional problems. I know of people in businesses that are struggling, you know, particularly those that seem to be a bit targeted, like restaurants, for instance, are struggling. I think it's particularly hit the elderly in a difficult way because they're more susceptible to the disease, as the ongoing statistics show. And so they're having to be a lot more cautious, a lot more separated. And it's just heartbreaking to watch people that you love not being able to be hugged or touched or even visited very often. I saw a video, it was over in the UK, I believe, from the accents I was hearing, but it's just a brief video of this lady's mother being rolled up to a window so the adult daughter could interact with her. And it was clear that the mother was having health issues and breathing problems. And the daughter was trying to engage the staff there about her own mother. And they just ended up getting frustrated with her and wheeling her mother away. And she's just standing there helpless, watching her mother be wheeled away. And there's just something not right about even that. And so just seeing those kinds of scenes and seeing the separation, isolation, I think has been one of the biggest things you've heard of. I don't have statistics readily at hand, but I've heard of stories and accounts of teenagers and they're in this isolation period, taking their lives. And again, I don't know if that's an increase or not. I don't have the stats, but I've certainly heard of stories of that nature. And so I think those are some of the things that Corona is doing, is people in isolation are struggling a lot more to cope with it.
I can't, you know, my son's in college now, and I was talking to another guy. He's a sophomore now. It wasn't not related to my son or my family at all, about his past school year. and just how hard it has been on college students. They are trying so hard to stay at school this year that it's like they have to isolate themselves. And if they're around somebody, they have to go home. And I mean, it's just been, it's putting an undue burden, I think, on a lot of our young kids. Another thing, Barry, and this is anecdotal. I don't have the numbers in front of me. Domestic violence has increased. Mm-hmm. Especially when people were told you have to stay home. I saw an uptick on domestic violence, divorce filings, and drug overdoses and drug usage, I think among the young has gone up during this time for the same reasons that you've cited. And the one big thing I think that I have noticed, is that the coronavirus has really sown division, in our land. And I don't want to, and I'm not just talking about political division, but division in churches. You know, do we have to wear masks? Don't we? Does the government have the right to tell us what we can do in our church, or don't they? And it's really, it has caused division such that, you know, now some places have two services, one for masks, one without, which it just seems odd to me. But you know, those are the things I think this has done to society. There are those who have been, I think, taken a strident approach to coronavirus, and then those who have taken the Chicken Little approach. And I think we're seeing the effects of that and the division in our land and in our churches.
Yeah, you know, I think with that, there's so much there. Absolutely, I think the elderly have been called upon to bear burdens and crosses that they shouldn't in many ways be having to bear. You know, I remember in May, one of my pastoral mentor, John Tweed, died. I know we've talked about him in previous episodes, but, you know, I remember when COVID started and people were very hesitant to come talk to him. You know, here's a 90-year-old man. He's in the high-risk category. And you know, every time you showed up at his door and I'm going to stand on this side of the door, you stay on that side. I remember him telling me, you know, Kyle, I'd rather die from the virus than die in loneliness. Like, I don't want the last part of my life to be spent talking to people through a screen door. So come on in, sit in my living room. And if the virus takes me, it's going to take me. And, you know, by the Lord's grace, the virus didn't take him, but he is with Jesus now. And I think that is a significant loss for our elderly, many of whom are in the twilights of their lives. And here's the way that they have to live those final years.
Add to that? It's not only that the elderly are losing, but the younger people are losing what the elderly bring into their life. You know, the sitting around and hearing stories and the encouragements that often grandparents bring to their children and grandchildren. You know, we miss that, and it's hard. I see families struggling that way.
Yep. So families and churches, you know, I think about our church. One of the things that really Rachel and I have always really appreciated about our congregation is the age demographic, from the littlest to the oldest. But our oldest have had to remove themselves from corporate worship because they're in these high risk categories. And, you know, and one thing that we keep praying and reminding people, you know, we feel it when the whole body's not here, and we miss them. And they, you know, they just, you know, to hear, I mean, not to get too nostalgic here, but, you know, to hear the elderly singing the Psalms and singing out of their own experience of God's grace. And we've been deprived of that. We've lost that in this year. And I think that's tragic. And I think too, you know, you have both noted, is even just anecdotally or statistically, I think I've seen, you know, this year providentially has been the year that I have dealt with pastorally the heaviest things, regardless of the pandemic. I've just dealt with some very, very big issues. And I found the pandemic has just made all of those 10 times worse. You know, I remember dealing with a divorce situation a week before pandemic lockdowns really happened, dealing with a woman whose husband just walked out on her, and her whole world is turned upside down. And then within weeks, all of society stops. And I remember her just saying, I don't feel that I was given the room to mourn and grieve and figure my life out because everybody became obsessed with the pandemic. You know, whereas normally I'd have support and family to walk through and work through these things with me, my troubles and my pain were put on this back burner, and you know, and it really, really has. And that's not just a one case. I have seen that multiple times throughout this. It has exacerbated problems immensely in people's lives. And so much has been stolen there. So I think that's a good general kind of overview of some of the things, but let's get to then how as Christians should we be thinking about this? Is a stolen year, where are the good things? Where can we see God's hand working? How as Christians should we be responding to that? Is it all bad and doom and gloom? Let's interact with some of these losses in a Christian way.
Well, this sounds trite, it is, but my commute's gotten a lot better going to work.
That is trite. Thank you, Barry.
It's amazing being able to zip into work through the tunnel in Pittsburgh. But I have seen there have been some benefits. I think in some ways, I think we were talking a little bit about this before we began. But as you, I think it was you, Kyle, mentioned beforehand that a lot of the idols of our age have been, I don't know if they've been completely destroyed. They certainly haven't, but they've been toppled and seen for the weaknesses that they have, the sports and politics and all those things. We're seeing the ineptness of man to control things like they want to control them, or to participate in things they want to participate in. And so we've all had to take restock in what we value. I've seen, you know, in some ways people's lifestyles have simplified. They're staying home more. They're not running around as much. And I know for us, there've been times where that's been actually quite nice just to have a more simple rhythm of life. I've appreciated that aspect of it. So I think those are some of the positives. Also simplified church. We haven't been able to do a lot of other things except just worship. And I'm just thankful that we're able to continue to worship corporately as the people of God after we, I think a lot of churches went through their season of online only, but the Lord's allowed us to come back together and worship. And I just know there was a hunger and a thirst for it. And I think there's a greater appreciation for being able to meet before the Lord. And it's made passages and scriptures come alive in a lot of ways that if this hadn't have happened, I don't think would have. So anyway, those are some of the things I'm thankful that I'm seeing.
Yeah. The one thing I recall in the summer is you couldn't go do certain things, but one place you could go is like state parks. They were open, outdoor hiking. And so I took my family to several different places here in Indiana this past summer. And the one thing I noticed was a lot of families out. And when I say families, I mean like young kids and siblings together and, you know, teenagers from the same family together. And that probably would not have happened had everything been normal. So I know the flip side of that is people get tired of each other. There's domestic disputes and whatnot. But the good part of that is families were together and they didn't have a choice. And it gave them time to be a family. So I think that was a real blessing. I mean, I echo everything you said about church. I don't want to restate what you said. But I think it was good for families to be together and to have that time to be brother and sister. I mean, it did my heart good to see, you know, I have a senior son and his siblings playing a board game together every night and then keeping track of it because they didn't have anything else to do. So it was something special that I think that COVID did give to us if we took advantage of it. And, you know, something that we wouldn't have had but for this pandemic.
Yeah, I think, you know, it is a stolen year in many ways, but I think as Christians, we should be sensitive. You know, I think we've talked in 3GT before about judging providence and how careful we need to be with that. We don't have an infallible interpretation of it. But I couldn't help but marvel even at the beginning of this, you know, when you think of what COVID started to steal away, and what it did take, you know, it took educational institutions, it took the economy, it took our entertainment and our sports industries, it took politics, it took all the gods of our culture that we give our lives to and we serve and we center everything around. And I think as Christians, without being able to infallibly interpret providence, we do need to improve upon that and think upon that. You know, what a shame if coming out of 2020, and we'll see if 2021 is any brighter. What a shame if we haven't learned our lesson about, you know, building our lives around the gods of this world. You know, and there's been a part of me that has been concerned. You know, as society gets back to it, it's interesting. I live in a community where sports are very, very at the center of all of life. And it's been amazing how tirelessly and hard people have fought to have that back at all costs and all expense. There's a part of me that just wants to step back and say, you know, didn't we learn anything about the futility of this? You know, I love sports and our kids engage in them and I enjoy them for what they're worth. But I think as the church, we ought to take a step back and think about some of those things. I also think, you know, in a stolen year like this, I hope it's generally true that the church has learned what it means to lament. You know, I think that lamentation is such a significant part of the Christian life. I mean, we have a whole book of the Bible dedicated to it and one that will no doubt make you depressed if you sit and read all, you know, 200 verses or whatever. But such, you know, you even think of the Psalms and how often lamentation is present in the Psalms. You think of the life and the ministry of Jesus. You know, if the Apostle John can tell us that we're to walk in the steps of Jesus, then lamentation is to be a part of our lives. And I hope 2020 has taught us a little more about godly mourning and godly lamentation, even though I think innately we all enjoy the joy and the celebration, the feasting a little more. But, you know, I don't think that a stolen year is without the grace and the goodness of God. And we all need to kind of sit back and hopefully we reflect on that a little bit. So you guys have other thoughts?
Well, just to follow up with what you're saying, Kyle, just this past week or two, and it's not directly Corona related, but there's just a situation in the church and some brothers and I were in a time together of prayer, and we ended up weeping just over the church and hating what we're having to pray about, but still also just the sweetness that comes as you honestly cry out to God and lay your heart bare before Him and your brokenness. And so I do think what you're saying is really important, that we are being called by God Himself at this time with this, whenever He sends a judgment that has truly impacted all the countries of the world, we should be praying. We should be seeking Him more earnestly. So it is a time to, you know, one of the most simple yet wondrous things that we can do is pray, and to just have more time to be in prayer, more quietness in our lives for prayer, I think is a wonderful a gift that the Lord gives us, because it really does help put things back into more proper perspective. And, you know, I know, again, there's been some families I know of who've been impacted by the virus, by death, and to have a more eternal perspective, to have to live life with a greater awareness that of its temporary nature and how soon we could be facing eternity, that's a blessing from the Lord, even though it comes at a hard cost to bring us to a greater awareness of it, especially in our own land and nation. So,
yeah, I think
I really think that's true what you're saying.
I think that's a good observation. You know, I've had all kinds, multiple interesting conversations with people in the church where, you know, what has been interesting to observe is when you're a Christian, death is a normal part of your theology, you know, because it's the final step to going and seeing Jesus. And so, you know, we pray that as Christians, we live in the shadow of death all the time, you know, thinking upon that moment. And yet I think it's something our society avoids like the plague. You know, we don't want to talk about death. And it was an interesting to observe in some ways, some of the attitude, I think, towards from Christians versus, you know, those for whom death is not a normal part of their worldview or the way that they think about things. Anyway, I forgot exactly where that fit in with what you're saying, Barry, but there we go. Scott, you have any thoughts?
I do. You know, there's this old political phrase, don't let a good crisis go to waste. And I think that's kind of the approach we need to take as the church, as preachers, as elders, as believers, is, you know, there's this crisis and everybody is terrified and woe is me because of this. But, you know, this is a crisis that has the potential for us to take the gospel again to the people and share with them, hey, I know it seems hopeless. I know that there's this terrible situation, but there is hope, and that hope is in Christ. And this life is not the end all be all. And so in a religious sense, I don't think we should let this crisis go to waste. I mean, we do need to take time to call people to task about the idols that they have had that have been taken away. We need to call people back to repentance. We need to give people, as you mentioned, Kyla, a sobering and yet real talk about death and where death comes from and why there is death. I mean, all of these things have been made available to us. We can talk about them now a little bit more freely because of COVID. Why waste this opportunity? Let's take advantage of this for the sake of the kingdom.
One of the things I think as well that people are having to come to grips with, I think one of the great idols of our day, and this is not just true of any one political party. It's that in our nation, our citizens look to government for the solution to everything. And they're being shown that that's a fruitless way to go. And, you know, people are having to make decisions about, you know, we had one listener asking us about economic civil disobedience. When do businesses who have been told to not open, when do they say, well, you know, what right does the government have to tell us not to be open, to cut someone's hair or to serve them a meal? And they're having to wrestle through things like that. And so I think our freedoms, we're having to really think through more crisply our theology of the relationship between the government and the church, the government and businesses, and those types of things. And I think there'll be hopefully some healthy adjustments that come out of that. I don't know that I have all the answers for it. I think people have to really search the scriptures and act in good conscience. I know in our own county at one point, more at the beginning of this crisis than right now currently, that our county commissioners decided to stand against some of the lockdowns that our state governor was mandating upon us because they did not see those as just. And so that doctrine of the lesser magistrate, I saw being, I don't know if they were thinking that theologically, but I know that they were in a sense acting that out, and people responded to that more local leadership.
Obviously your county commissioners were wielding John Calvin's The Institutes of the Christian.
yeah, I'm sure they were. I'm sure they were.
Yeah, so I think 2020, overall, pretty bad year, but I think there are many things to be gleaned. It is a stolen year, but I think my big prayer is whatever has been taken from us in 2020, you know, may the Lord fill it up with a greater love for Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. So we are at the end of this episode of Three Guys Theologizing. I want to thank you very much for tuning in. Be sure to head over to our website, 3gt.xyz. Also, we are listener supported. And so if here at the start of 2021, you want to help contribute and partner with us, we would really appreciate that. More details are available there on our website. Head over to Apple Podcasts to subscribe to our podcast so that you never miss an episode of your favorite podcast and mine, Three Guys Theologizing.